This is side two of the interview with Mark Delgado.
So you try to take a diagonal pattern across the room from one corner to the other, or do you try to take a picture from each corner of the room?
No, the way you described it at first.
The diagonal. You'll walk in the door on one end of the room, one corner of the room, take a picture, and then walk over to the other corner looking back. And then how do you keep all the rooms straight? Do you draw a diagram of the layout or the floor plan? How do you keep the picture straight that this was the first bedroom and not the second or third bedroom?
It's just based on how the flow of the house goes. I always first, before I start taking my pictures, walk the entire house and look at it. I also turn on every single light in the house. It's some weird thing that I just do because you never know, especially for marketing photos, a light in a hallway on the far end that you don't think matters can make a big difference between something looking inviting and warm and something looking creepy and dark. So I walk through the whole house, I turn all the lights on, I get a feel for the layout, and then I take my pictures based on that. But I don't draw a diagram by any means. As you take the pictures in that sequence and knowing the beginning and end of each room and taking them in a way so that the end of one room leads to the beginning of the next, it's pretty simple to understand the flow of the house.
Do you use a special camera for these pictures?
I use a Sony CyberShot. It's my primary camera, and it's fast, and I love it because it automatically changes its settings depending on lighting, which is super helpful. I do at times use my iPhone 4, which surprisingly does a great job. It does a really good job, but it's not as fast. It's very time-consuming to use that, and it's more just as a hobby. So I use the CyberShot more than anything. It's a little handheld camera. It seems to get the best range. I also have a Nikon. My Nikon D3100 I use for exterior. It deals with the sunlight a little bit better than the little CyberShot can. It doesn't wash out the whole photo, and it does at times do a better job of just capturing exterior landscaping in comparison to the CyberShot.
Are you taking all these pictures by hand, or are you also using a stand or a tripod?
No, I take it all by hand.
Are these properties that you're selling, are they typically being sold as is, as you receive them, or are you also involved in repairs?
For the majority of them, I'm involved in repairs. For a long period of time, it was only one of my accounts that did that, which was my first account, the one where the guy called me. But now other banks have realized the benefit of doing that, and I've also adopted this outlook that any of these bank-owned properties are a reflection on themselves. So what's the point of spending millions of dollars on a commercial if you're going to ruin it by having a junky house next door to all these neighbors? For the most part, I'm overseeing a rehab of them, and that is my responsibility to create that rehab list and then kind of narrate to the asset manager why I think something should or shouldn't be addressed and what the benefit would be or if it's just wasted money.
Are they typically going with your suggestions?
Yeah, typically they do. You know, it helps to have a good connection with a loan officer so that they can keep you up to date on what appraisers are looking for. Because if you can take care of those, that's the best thing to do because then you're increasing your potential buyer pool. And the more buyers in the pool, the more money or the faster sale that you can potentially get.
How do you keep up to date with what loan officers and appraisers are looking for?
My wife's a loan officer of 10 years, so she's a perfect resource for me as far as that goes because she's an expert in the field. And then I have assigned loan officers from my different accounts who I reach out to all the time because I also direct business back towards them in appreciation for the business that their company gives to me. And so it's their criteria that are most important, and they help fill me in on what the responses are on current transactions and any red flags or hang-ups that pop up during any of those transactions, and then we address them going forward. And, you know, they tend to recur, so then you get a good understanding from experience as to what you should address and what you don't need to.
You're having to make estimates of the cost of the repairs. How are you doing that? Are you bringing contractors out each time? Do you just have a general rule of thumb in your head? You use a book? How do you do it?
I used to just send out contractors, and I would have no personal expectation as to what something would cost. But that was 4 years ago, and now today, I do have a general idea as to how much different things cost to repair, specifically carpet for a house, paint for a house, replacement of interior doors versus a man door from the garage to the interior, you know, that solid door would be different. And so for my banks that don't necessarily do rehabs all the time, I can give them an estimate, and then if they like the estimate, they'll then ask me to get a formal bid from a contractor. But for the bank accounts where they do the rehabs more times than they don't, I send the contractors first. But I always create the bid sheet myself, because I have to create the bid sheet and then get approval from the bank that they're willing to do these repairs, depending on what the cost ends up being when we get the formal numbers. But, you know, first have to make sure I'm not having the contractors do a bunch of busy work that for nothing, because then they'll just get upset and they won't want to bid anymore for you.
You're doing a lot of rehab on these properties now. What is the typical time frame for that rehab process? Is it taking a couple days, a couple weeks, a couple months?
For me, the average should be 3 days once I get approval. So day one, the house is empty. Let's say the house is empty day one. I walk it. I take all of my before photos, and I go back to my office. I put all the before photos on the computer, and I look through them on the computer because, for me personally, it helps me to focus on each room and not be distracted by everything else that's going on around me, so that I can more clearly identify a hole in the wall or a hole in the ceiling or excessive stains on the carpet that maybe there's not enough lighting there. Maybe just I'm in a house where I don't want to be standing there taking notes for an hour, etc. And so I will then take those before photos and I'll create the bid sheet on that same day, send it off for approval. Once I get the approval, which is normally within minutes, I send an email out to the different contractors that I work with, and I give them the address for the house. I attach this bid sheet that I've written up for them and ask them to go look at it. They're required to get me a response within 24 hours, so the following day I have the numbers. I send that for approval, and I should get, again, approval response that same day, and then I notify the contractors. They should start within 24 hours again. So from me stepping foot in a vacant house, a new assignment, 2 days later, 3 days later, there should be a crew in there working, and it should take them about 3 days to get their job done. Obviously, if it's an extensive rehab, it's different, but if it's needing carpet, paint, replacement of a few doors, wallpaper removal or retexturing of some walls, trash out, initial yard cleanup, all of those things should be able to be done for me, in my opinion, in my experience. Other people may be different, but my expectation is 3 days. Because, you know, you don't have to paint the house and then do the yard. You can do them at the same time. You don't have to, you know, and it's just the crews I work with know the expectation, and that's what they're used to now. That's normally the time frames we work with.
Sounds like you're trying to achieve the goal from the minute you get the property to the minute the rehab is done of a week.
Yes, that is the goal. That is the goal. It's not my goal. That's the expectation of the bank.
So they're setting that time frame, and you figured out how to meet it.
Right. The most difficult bank has set that as the time frame. The other ones are more lenient on that. But like I was said originally, it's better to take that the highest bar and clear that, because then all the bars below it will be happy.
Agents that haven't been in REO but have heard about it are concerned about the next issue, and that is sometimes you have to put up money out of your own personal pocket as the agent to prime the pump and get things going and then be reimbursed later. Are you having to put money up for these rehabs?
Case by case, but yes. And that is a strain. I know that if I had to do that 4 years ago when I started, I don't know how I would have been able to manage that. I don't have a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac account, but I've been told by some of my friends that do that they're also, in addition to any rehab that may be asked, they're asked to front the cash for key money. And that can be pricey as well. And that is definitely one of the downsides of doing this type of work. Today, I'm in a better position and I can handle that without being too stressed out about it. Just agents that get into this business need to know that it does seem that banks are looking for any opportunity to not have to pay for things. So you have to make sure you have a good understanding of what their reimbursement requirements are, what they need to be submitted with your request for reimbursement, and that you are doing that and you're doing it as soon as you can. So as soon as the work's done and you have the invoice, you need to put it all together the way they want it and send it back to them. Just be good at accounting to make sure you get your money back.
On each particular property, if you were to try to budget out for the next year and you were going to take on 100 assignments, what would you try to think of in your mind as far as how much you would need per property as far as cash that you were going to have to front for the bank?
Me personally, my accounts pay directly. I get my invoices in from whoever has done work. I submit it into their systems and ask for the contractor or the vendor to be paid directly. They've already supplied me with W-9s, and they're all input into the system so that I don't have to worry about that. If someone didn't supply me with a W-9, I wouldn't work with them. But if for whatever reason I got crazy in my head and decided to work with someone that wouldn't provide me with a W-9, I would then have to pay for them. I would have to pay them and then submit for reimbursement myself. And if I had to do that for all of these houses, for 100 homes in a year, on average, I would say that a 1,200 square foot home here is probably going to have about $5,000 to $7,500 spent on it in rehab. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. And obviously, that's 100 properties spread over the years, so you would hope that you're being reimbursed, but you really should probably have, like, man, if you had to do that, $50,000. But on the bright side, I don't think that anyone is being requested to do that. I don't know that anyone has to cover all of the expenses. And the banks that don't pay the vendors directly tend to not do as extensive rehabs as my clients do. So that's also the benefit. Chances are that they're only going to want you to do, let's say they just want you to do a trash out and initial sales clean. Initial sales clean is probably $300. And the trash out varies, but let's just say it's $300 also. So maybe $1,000 for each one. And then again, like I said, you know, you're on a rotation there where you sell one, you get one. And when you sell it on the sale date of when it has a new owner, you've probably already submitted all your stuff for reimbursement and hopefully would have already been paid back. So again, you're probably just talking like maybe $20,000, which is a ton of money. I mean, I wouldn't want to have to do that. And I'm glad that I don't, but that is the risk and the sacrifice that you're going to have to prepare yourself for to get into the business, especially if the servicers and the banks that you're working for are asking that of you, because the alternative is don't work for them and don't make any money in this type of business. And for me, when you kind of assess the whole situation, you have no choice. And that's a risk, a business risk and a potential cost that I think is one you have to take.
Have you worked it out so that you are not fronting the money on the rehab?
Correct.
So you have the banks paid direct. Did you have to arrange that specifically with them over time and initially you had to put up the money, or did you just look for banks that did not require you to put up money?
I did not look for them. It was just, I was fortunate in that sense. So the account that does most of the rehabs, they have always preferred to pay directly. It's a check and balance thing, I think, for them as well. They want to verify that who's doing the work is licensed, is in good standing with the state, and is doing a high quality of workmanship. And if I'm in between that, I would think that that would limit their ability to check. And I think they want to independently be able to run people through whatever systems it is they're doing to make sure they're working with people they want to work with.
How about the cash for keys? Are you having to front the money on that, or are you also getting the banks to front the money?
The bank pays for that. I don't know what goes into what they're looking for there, but they are running social security numbers, and they're running background checks, and they're running addresses and cross-referencing them with things within their own systems to make sure that they can move forward with a cash for key thing. I'm sorry, I don't know what it is they're looking for, but I have had where I've submitted the agreement signed by the occupant and their W-9s and sent it off and it be rejected by the system. I've never told why, which is probably better for me. Yeah, they definitely pay for that themselves.
So on each of these properties, are you being required to front any money for the bank and then get reimbursed later?
Yes. When I deal with HOAs, a lot of times they won't give any information until they're paid up front. That's probably about a $400 to $500 cost. Any emergency repairs that the home suffers that jeopardizes its integrity, I have to pay up front, and that can vary. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I was telling you several things that happened to a house, and I had to front all of that money. It ended up totaling a couple thousand dollars, and I have to submit for reimbursement. And, you know, that's a little nerve-wracking because you don't even know if these repairs are going to be approved. And if they're not approved, you're not going to get reimbursed. So you do have to rely on your experience and your expertise and just, you know, just think it through when things happen and determine, you know, is this an emergency and needs to be taken care of, which is your responsibility as the listing agent with the assignment, or is this something that can wait for me to submit for approval before I move forward? Yeah, I do have to pay for things just as they come up. It's not across the board, because luckily bad things don't happen to every single house, but there are certain things that need to be addressed right then and there, and there's no time to go through all the rigmarole.
What would be a couple quick examples of emergency repairs you'd have to address immediately?
Got a house where the roof was discovered to be leaking, and we thought it was just a simple fix, and when we got up there with the storm coming in, it ended up that someone had covered a fire-damaged roof with comp shingles, you know, a otherwise nice-looking roof, and I had to pay for that repair in order to secure protect the house right off the bat. I had another house where someone came out and they stole some critical equipment of the pump, because it was in a rural setting, and without the water, the pool equipment and the pool itself and the painting and the installation of the kitchen, actually that was a big rehab, none of that could go forward without the water. And that was a repair that needed to be done, because we have to stay on the time frames of what the bank wants for all of this work. Like, that's an example of something where, when I just think of it logically, the house needs water. It's a utility. This one happened to be on a well, and someone came and stole some stuff, but it needed to be remedied right away so that everything else stayed on track. A couple broken window things where people throw things through windows and break in, or vagrants break in through windows. The board up is something I have to pay for up front to resecure the house and make sure people can't get in. That's pretty much it, though. It's almost always involves the securing or protection of a property.
You have a lot of experience with cash for keys. Are there any tricks of the trade there?
You just have to be understanding. I mean, number one, you need to know that the people you're dealing with are going through probably a real tough time. Either they're the homeowner, the prior homeowner, and they probably don't feel too great about the bank, and they're in a tough situation, or they're a tenant, and they may not have even known you were coming. Both instances, you have to be understanding, be empathetic to what they're dealing with. But on top of that, I always go out of my way to make sure that it's understood that I have been asked to come to a property to check on it on behalf of the bank, but I do not work for the bank. You know, I'm not an employee of the bank. I'm not an employee of whatever particular bank it is. I work for Coldwell Banker, and we're completely separate, and we're just the messenger. And we know it's a tough situation, but we are, you know, this is what the bank is willing to offer. And then it always helps if you can help explain the process to the person so that they can take all of the information and make whatever decision is best for them. Normally, the best decision for them is to accept the cash for key offers, because that's the only way that they will get any sort of help in moving. The other option most of the time is eviction. And that may get them more time in the house, but there's no money at the end of that. And the eviction process here ends with a sheriff lockout, not the most enjoyable of experiences. I just try to help them understand what their options are, what the pros and cons of each thing is. The pro of the cash for key being obviously money to help them move. The con being you don't get to stay as long as you otherwise would. Versus the eviction being you get to stay a little bit longer, but there's no money because the bank takes the money that they were willing to give to you to help move, and they have to reallocate that to paying the lawyers for the eviction. I mean, there's no trick to it. Normally, it's just you give people the information. Don't try to be manipulative. You know, it's not your personal house. I don't personally own it. I don't personally have an interest one way or the other. I just want them to be able to make a decision that's best for them, and present it in that way, and normally get a good response.
Do most occupants accept the cash for keys, or do most of them go all the way through the eviction process?
mostly except for cash for keys. Right now, I think of the last 10 I've done, only one didn't. I don't know why he didn't. He ended up moving out within this time frame that was offered to him for cash for keys, but I'm not sure what the special circumstances were in his life to not take it.
When you're negotiating a contract on one of these REO properties, you're receiving offers from buyer agents. What recommendations do you have to buyer agents to give them a upper hand, a better shot at getting a winning bid, a winning contract?
Well, I try to be as helpful as I possibly can because I know how tough it is in the market here. And I don't like the idea of people just spinning their wheels for no reason. So when people call, when agents call, I try to give them as much information as I can without jeopardizing my responsibility to the seller. Because rule number one is never forget who you work for, and I work for the seller. I'm the listing agent. But that being said, I don't think I'm hurting anyone by telling them how many offers are in. I don't think I hurt anyone when I share if the offers are at, below, or above asking price. Because if your client has a certain limitation on what they can offer, that kind of information helps you to know we should probably move on to something else instead of getting their hopes up for a property they have very little shot at getting. And if they get that information and they understand that, hey, there's a lot of offers and they're all over asking price and they still want to put an offer in, well, good for them, but at least they have that information up front and aren't being misled and are still choosing on their own to move forward with their offer. I have a little template seller instructions that I put in for all of my properties, and you know, there's certain things that the bank requires, like they won't accept DocuSign. They want only wet signatures on it. They want a pre-approval letter that is from a reputable company, preferably from whatever particular bank it is that owns the house. I do have assigned loan officers from each bank, so I put their information in there so that the buyer's agents and their clients can contact them to get pre-approved if they want. I make it clear to them that although I'm strongly suggesting they get pre-approved with my assigned loan officer, they don't have to get their loan with that person. It's just a double check of that the loan letter that they're providing to me is valid, that their financed offer is good. And like I said, I share with them the number of offers that I have, and I give them an idea of above, below, or at range, but never specific price, because I think that then is unfair to all the other agents that have offers in. If you start telling specific prices, then that person can just go up by $100 or $1,000, and that's definitely not fair to the other agents that I'm not on the phone with at any given time. It could cost the seller money, because who knows what they're willing to offer.
Agents who haven't worked with the REO market would probably have another question. They probably heard a lot of different things, and that is, how do you get paid? Do you get paid a commission just like a regular sell?
Yes.
And are those commissions in line with the retail side, or do you think you're making more or less?
My biggest account, it's in line, and that biggest account is directly through a bank. They don't have a servicer that they hire. They have their broker network works directly for them. So with them, I get paid 10% for me and 10% for the buyer's agent. So a total of plus the buyer's agents can get a bonus. For the servicers, they take a referral fee right off the top. So the listing agreements may come across looking traditional, but they're not necessarily, because they're taking a 30 to 40% referral fee right off the top, and that results in obviously a reduced commission. And with those servicers, as the price of the home goes up, the commission structure actually does change a little bit. So if you're selling a house like the $800,000 range, they adjust your commission lower.
And are the banks then setting both the commission for you as well as the co-op agent or the buyer's agent?
Yes.
Let's get back to this concept of team, or in your case, the lack of it. You've decided to go at your own. Why did you make that decision to not have any team members to help you and support you with this endeavor?
One of the experiences I had was I gained an account because an agent who does a lot of business lost an account as a result of him having runners that would check on properties and take BPO photos for him for exterior BPOs. And exterior BPOs tend to be the ones that are done before the foreclosure sale. And what had happened was this runner didn't actually look at the house. I don't know where they pulled their photos from, but the house had burnt down. And it completed the BPO stating that the house was in average condition. Yeah, and the banks, I don't know if they do this anymore, and I don't know if maybe it's specific to each bank, but this particular bank used our exterior BPOs to help set the opening bid price at the foreclosure auctions at the county courthouse. And so they were given drastically wrong valuation numbers, so they asked way too much money for the opening bid and got stuck with a burnt lot. Obviously, I mean, the consequence of that were severe. The asset manager wanted to know what the deal was. I mean, we're instructed that we're supposed to be doing these ourselves. Again, I don't know if that's across the board with every bank, but for this particular one, it is our responsibility to be doing these ourselves. We're not supposed, I mean, it's okay to have someone submitting a utility bill for you, but you're supposed to be the one issuing the BPO price because you're the expert. You're the one, it's your mind that the bank has hired. You're the one that said, I've been doing this for X amount of years and I'm familiar with these areas and I, you know, yada, yada, yada. Down the line, it's your resume that they looked at and approved. It's your expertise that they're looking for, not some runner, not someone that they don't know who probably has limited to no real estate experience and someone that obviously isn't reliable because they just said the house was fine when it was not even there. And that experience for me, where I benefited from, scared me. And I vowed that I would never, ever lose an account because of something someone else did or didn't do. Especially if, just for me and my personal feeling on the matter was, if I can do it myself, I should do it myself. And for all the other reasons I just said, I mean, it's asked of me to do it myself by the bank, and it's me that's on those resumes and those applications. I feel like I have a responsibility to do it myself, and I don't want to lose business from laziness.
You've chosen this path to do all this business yourself, and yet you've been able to do an amazing amount of business for someone working by themselves. I asked you earlier how you did that. You mentioned systems. What kind of systems have you put in place?
Just templates for each thing, trying to answer questions, like, for instance, dealing with occupants. I put together a cover letter that helps to explain the questions that I tend to receive so that they have the answers up front without having to have a conversation with me that would take even longer than me just having to write that letter that one time. Having templates for my REO bid sheets. I know that for the majority of the houses I'm going to have to put a bid sheet together. I know that my experience has demonstrated certain elements are always going to need to be addressed. So I have the bid sheet and the wording of what is required for each item already in there so that I can just change the address and send it out when the new properties come up. Having a system in place for taking the pictures so that when I go to a house, the system's already there and you just go and you act out that method of doing it and you just get faster and better at it. The other key too, in addition to systems, is just working. I mean, working an 8-hour day or maybe even a 10-hour day in real estate, but working that whole time, not chit-chatting in the break room or going out to lunch with a bunch of buddies in the office and killing an hour and a half to 2 hours and, you know, twiddling your thumbs for a little bit. But if you're legitimately working through that whole time, there's enough time to get the majority of the work done. It sounds like a lot of work, and it is a lot of work, but I think that if you are applying yourself to that work for that dedicated period of time, you know, 8 a.m. to 5 or whatever your hours is, you can get it done.
Do you use a lot of checklists?
I have checklists, but I don't necessarily use them. I think I wrote them up because it helps my mind remember the things I need to do. And I have them if I ever do need them to check and verify what it is or is required of me. But I don't necessarily use them all the time. But I do have them. I did write them up, and you know, some are for the rehab process. And I would send them to the contractors when I was trying to help them to get into the habit of doing things in the time frame that the bank wanted. I broke down what the bank wanted. And so I have a checklist for that. I had a checklist for when I get the property, you know, turn the utilities on, secure the house, take the pictures, send the bid. You know, I had all that broken down as well. Just now, I don't necessarily use it as often as I did in the past.
Do you use any type of software program to help track everything that's happening with each of these homes?
No. I use what the banks require me to use. One account I use, their system is called Aspen, and it's online. HMSI has a system called DARES. Again, that's online, and I use that. And you're required to use it. It's not a choice. And the systems themselves help keep you on task. It lets you know what it is you have to do right now. And then once you complete that, it does trigger new tasks for you to complete. And it gives you time frames for that. This is due in 1 day, 2 days, 5 days, 7 days. So the systems that they are giving as requirements to use help, but I do not have any additional systems that I use on top of those.
You've mentioned this time issue. How many hours are you working in a week?
I love what I do. I love the REO business. I love how dynamic it is. So I like it's work, but it's not tiring for me. It doesn't register as being this. I like doing it, and I would say I work probably 6 days every week, and I'm probably working about 10 hours every day.
Think you're working about 60 hours a week?
Yeah. Spread that over 7 days. I work real early in the morning, like today. I called you at 9, but I'd been up since 6, and I've been working since 7. You know, and then at night I work as well. Like last night I was working until, I think I didn't stop working until about 10:30. It averages out. Some days a little bit slower than others as you get things done on one day, and then there's nothing to do the next day. So you recharge your batteries as the week goes through.
Did you say you tried to take off 1 day a week?
Yeah.
Which day do you take off?
Sunday.
And that time you spend with your family?
Yep. And parts of Saturday as well. I'm the earliest one to wake up in the family, and we have a home office. And that helps me immensely. So I'm able to get a lot of work done while everyone else is still asleep. By the time everyone else wakes up, I've probably been up for a minimum of 2 hours, but sometimes 3 or 4.
What system do you use to schedule your time or control your time? You have a time management system?
I just use my iPhone. I put scheduled appointments and whatnot in there. It like integrates itself into my Outlook, which is awesome. And vice versa, Outlook actually integrates itself back into my iPhone. I did not do anything specific to make it do that. That's just what it does. And that's a huge help for me.
Do you try to use any type of time blocking? Do you do certain tasks at certain hours of the day each day?
I try to do my offers, any offers that I need to submit to the bank for consideration on a property. I try to do those early in the morning so that I can stay focused on that. And I'm talking, you know, before the sun comes up, like so about 6 a.m., because no one's calling and there's no distractions. Once the business day begins, you're going to get a lot of phone calls from agents and buyers off of signs and off the internet, and then different clients are going to be calling in. So I try to save the work for that period of time that is not as time-consuming, where like each small task or job doesn't take as much time as something like offer submission and review can take. I check on my houses a minimum of once a week. That's something I try to do early in the morning as well. It's safer to do that. Some of the neighborhoods aren't as nice as others, and some of the rougher types of individuals don't seem to get up early in the morning. I'd rather catch them asleep and ask them to leave than get there and they're awake and they're asking me to leave.
You mentioned you get buyer leads coming off sign calls. What do you do with those buyer leads?
Sometimes refer them out, and sometimes I keep them. Only thing that depends on is how much work I have to do. I always try to answer any question they have, regardless if they're my client or not, when they call, so that they can decide if they want to move forward or not. I have information that they send them. A lot of times I'll refer them to whoever my assigned loan officer is for that particular property, if it's bank owned. So if it's a Wells Fargo property, I will send them to my assigned Wells Fargo guy. I'll CC him on the email that I send to the client, and I'll CC myself so I can save it to follow up if I need to later on. And I kind of let the loan officers take it from there and decide if they're qualified or not. But I try not to represent too many buyers, because every client deserves your full attention, and the way the market is right now here for us with such a limited inventory, it's a lot of work to get a buyer into contract. And you need to be able to be there for them as fast as they need you to be. And so you can't handle that many buyers here right now at any given time and do the type of work that I'm doing, you know, my bread and butter work, and handle a lot of buyers. So that restricts me on what I can do with those leads other than refer them out or send them to the loan officers for pre-approval, you know, in order to buy me some time, you know, a few days or whatever.
When you refer these buyer leads out, are you asking for a referral fee from that agent?
Sometimes, and it's just a flat 25%. And it's normally, it's normally actually just for that. I know in the past, some of the clients that I've referred out have been people that bought multiple properties after that, and I don't get referral fees from that. You know, I should probably be more on top of that, but at the same time, you know, I didn't have the time to do it, what they needed me to do, and this agent did, and I think that's a great bonus for them. You know, I don't necessarily want to take anything from them when they're working their butt off to get things done for their business as well.
Now, you've mentioned answer the phone multiple times. Is it important for you to answer the phone each time it rings?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. If you don't answer your phone, I really think it gives people the wrong first impression. And you can't answer the phone all the time. Sometimes you're already on the phone when someone's calling, but you should try to call them back as soon as you can, because I actually don't know this from me answering the phone and getting good responses. It's more prevalent that you hear about other agents that don't answer their phone and hearing what people have to say about that. I do get people, agents and buyers, when I answer the phone and say, oh, I'm so glad you answered, or thank you for answering, you know, after the conversation saying thank you for answering, which in itself is a demonstration of how important it is to them that you are answering the phone when they call. So yes, I think that's very important.
I think an agent who has not had any experience with REO would look at your business model and try to decide if it was for them. They'd recognize that you're doing a lot of running around, but you don't have a staff, which certainly helps. And they're probably wondering in their mind, is your operation profitable?
Well, yeah. I don't have the stress or the overhead to pay anybody else. I can't even imagine what it would be like to be in this type of market and be responsible not only for my own well-being, my son and my wife, but also for the well-being of employees. That's just one more reason for me to want to do this by myself. And I look at the numbers of other agents that do have teams, and when I know they have licensed agents on their teams, I think, well, you should be doing however many other agents and assistants you have. Your business should be multiplied by that number. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense to me.
And that's what people do. They look at these different business models when they're at the beginning trying to plan out. Something that usually helps is to look at different business models and try to get a handle on what is a reasonable profit margin for each model. For instance, you're running by yourself, so we assume you've got a higher percentage of your revenue that's hitting the bottom line as opposed to one of these large teams. Would you mind sharing with us either what percentage hits the bottom line or a goal that you're trying to achieve?
Well, my expenses are just going to be the cost of my marketing materials that I put at a house, which for any house, let's just say that's $50 worth of flyers. $50 worth of flyers is going to be about 100 to 150 flyers. And then my virtual tour, but that's not specific on each property. That's per month, and that's, I think, $30 a month. So $30 a month for every house, and then, you know, $50 for every closed transaction. My expenses for these is not that high. It's the expenses in the time commitment. And that being said, like I said, when you actually work during the hours that you've committed to work, it doesn't interfere with my private life. So, I mean, I don't know how much it's in my bottom line, but a lot, 70%, 75, 80. I'm just being conservative, actually.
I think it might be even higher from what you've stated.
It's me going out and taking the pictures. I'm not paying someone to do that. I'm not paying a runner to go check on occupancy. It's me doing that. So I guess there's gas. But again, none of that is that big of an expense for me. It's nowhere near what it would be if I had to pay other people to do stuff.
Would you think it'd be reasonable to say that your profit margin may be as high as 90%?
Yes.
Of $100 that comes in, only $10 is going out in expenses and the rest is going to you?
Yes.
That's fantastic.
For agents that are considering this business or doing this, it's not rocket science. The most important thing is just persistent drive and willingness to work, to educate yourself and persistently drive towards your goal. That's it. That is it. Education will help make you smarter, and your persistent drive will put you in the position to get the reward from your intelligence.
Education. How have you educated yourself on this business? You mentioned in the early days you talked to agents that were already doing it. Since then, have you been reading books or taking classes, or how have you educated yourself? Do you go to conferences?
I've gone to a handful of conferences, maybe one a year now. Before, I used to go to maybe three a year. I don't necessarily go to conferences that are specific to REO business because I feel that it's important to get a good understanding of real estate in a bigger picture to understand what's going on outside of your little bubble, and so that you can anticipate things coming from outside of that bubble into your little world. Read lots of books. There's several websites that I don't know what the websites are because through my Facebook feed and through my email, they send me the articles, but I read them. I wish I could remember what those are. There's some message boards actually that are great. And again, I just have the links and I click on them. I can't think of what they are, but there's one that was a real helpful message board. Man, I wish I could remember what it was for you now, but I just click on the links and I go to it, and I was very surprised when I found it. But if people do a search for message boards, the best thing about those message boards for keeping you educated is that the posts are made by other agents in different parts of the country, but still they're sharing their experiences of what works and doesn't work and different companies that are popping up or maybe going away or changing their regions. And that can help to get you in the right direction to get more business. But yeah, reading is critical. And then just doing it is a great educator. But I also have designations. I take the time to take the NAR courses or different distressed property courses in order to get the designations to help better educate myself on what other agents are doing or what the industry as a whole is expecting. There's different designations, but they all help.
Do you think it's too late for a new agent to get into the REO game?
No, it's never too late, ever. Some of the worst advice I was ever given was by an agent who was producing well at the time, and he told me that if you're not making $100,000, you have no business being in real estate and you should quit. And I was probably making $40,000 when he told me this. And that was the worst bit of advice I'd ever had, and I made it my goal to do better than him. And I remember I went into my broker and I told him, I didn't tell him that story, but I told him, I was like, you know what, I think next year I'm going to work my butt off to be number 29 in the company, because if I can do that, then I'll beat this guy over here. And he laughed at me. And the following year, I think I was number 5 in the company. It's never too late to get in. Because what I was telling you before is today, that broker network may be perfect and everyone's happy and there's no opportunities, but people retire, people change, people move. Sometimes things happen, like that burned down house story I told you. You know, things happen. And that wasn't even my HUD account. You know, I have different stories for different accounts that I've gotten, but they're all very similar, you know, this deep into this market, that someone dropped the ball and you need to be there to pick it up. And that could be any day.
Why do you think you've been so successful?
I just want to do well. I think it's important to do the right thing, not because of some reward for doing the right thing or out of fear of doing the wrong thing and being punished, but because it's the right thing to do. I like what I do. I think that I do a really good job of helping people through tough situations when I'm dealing with the occupants. And I think I do a really good job of trying to get the absolute most money out of a house that's been foreclosed on for the bank, that in turn helps the neighbors around it minimize the damage of a current marketplace to their home values. I love this type of business for those reasons. I'm not scared of hard work, and I don't know. I just some sort of a drive to want to do it.
You wrote down something on your document that you gave to us that said you have a persistent drive fueled by paranoia. What are you scared of? What's the paranoia part?
Well, the paranoia part comes from the stark contrast between successful agents right now in Sacramento to the struggling ones. It's not a gradual decline. There's a big drop-off between the two. And I'm very fortunate to be successful over these last several years through my hard work. And I've had multiple examples of how someone else making a mistake and me getting the benefit because I didn't do whatever it is that they happen to do and benefiting from that. So the paranoia comes from making sure that I don't become like one of those people where I get maybe complacent and comfortable and as a result make a mistake. I allow that paranoia to be a positive and to further drive me to do well.
If you were to advise a brand new agent just getting in the business, what would you tell them to do first?
First thing to do is I would call expired calls. I would go through the MLS and look up expired listings and call on them, regardless if they were short sales or whatever the situation happens to be. Start getting the experience of interacting with sellers. Believe it or not, I would actually say hold open houses every weekend to put you in contact with buyers and just establish yourself as a professional in the marketplace and in real estate. And I would start going to mixers. I would interact with other agents at any sort of mixer event that's put on in your area. And I would interact with the loan officers and other elements of the real estate industry that go to those. And just introduce yourself again, establish yourself as a professional in the marketplace and see what job opportunities perhaps could come from that. Like a termite guy, may not think anything special about it, but maybe on the side he's rehabbing houses and needs an agent to sell them for him or needs an agent to help him identify fixers to fix. Maybe a loan officer you can pair with or a loan officer can put you, is not happy with whoever they have assigned to their REO account and is looking for someone new, Who knows what the opportunities could be, but definitely got to get out there and interact with both the public and other industry professionals for a new agent.
Well, Mark, that's excellent advice. You prove that you don't need a team to sell a lot of properties. Your drive and determination, combined with your organizational skills and systems, allows you to operate your business profitably and efficiently. You really are full-time, hands-on, and accountable. Thank you again for being our top agent of the month.
You've been listening to the Mastermind Agent Interview of the Month Club, where top agents, rising agents, team members, and guests from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the club interviews at www.mastermindagent.com.